What's happening, y'all? This is Todd Wilson with another episode of Elevate Your Game. Today, we have a very special guest, Hall of Famer, state champion coach, former Division I athlete, basketball, track and field, Mr. Reggie Morris Sr. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate the invite.
No, absolutely. Love that we get to get some of your wisdom on camera and talk about your journey and the impact that you've had just over the years. We start the show off with the Wall of Hoop movies. Your favorite hoop movie of all time and why?
Well, He's Got Game is a favorite movie of mine with some conditions to it. Obviously, in my era, the first really big movie that we all jumped on was Hoosiers, based on the excitement of it being a small town and the things that took place there. Coach Carter is another one that I enjoy because it kind of related to my journey and the things that I had done with my athletes in the inner city. So it did hit home base with me from that standpoint. Plus, they actually filmed, I was coaching and working at Southwest College in Los Angeles. They actually filmed parts of Coach Carter at Southwest College. So that was, kind of nice to have that connection. He Got Game is a little bit more special to me, primarily for one reason. And the one reason is the premise of He's Got Game is based on Jesus Shuttleworth, whose character was Ray Allen. And Ray Allen was always asking, well, he wasn't always asking, but he was asking his dad, why did you name me Jesus? Why did you name me Jesus? And his dad was Denzel Washington. And Denzel said, I named you Jesus because you were named after one particular guy. And the guy that he was talking about was Earl the Pearl Monroe. And in my office and at my home right now, I have three basketball people up in my office in my home. I did, and particularly in my home. One is Russell Westbrook, because he played for my son, and I'm close to him. Two would be Oscar Robinson, who was my idol when I grew up. The original triple-double guy for a season. And the third would be Earl Monroe. And Earl Monroe, they called him Earl the Pearl. And Earl was just a great magician with the basketball. And you could see films of Earl Monroe, and he was not this big athletic guy like many of the, and neither was Oscar to a certain degree, not, big hops and dunking on people, but Earl was just a showman and fancy with the ball and had that swagger, was cool. So Earl Monroe is one of my favorite players.
No, man, that's awesome. I think it's really cool that even, for me growing up, I was in the N1 mixtape generation, the Allen Iverson. That's what was intriguing to you too, was the flair of the fancy stuff that us basketball coaches like, hey, you're doing too much with that jump stop, one-two dribbles. Right. But that's what always catches our attention
is that
skill set and creativity with the ball.
Also with Earl, he had the combination of all the flair, but he was also in the same line as Walt Frazier, who was playing with the Knicks, who was always dressed, long coats, big hats, and Earl had that swagger about him also.
I love it. I love it. I got to go do some more Earl the Pearl research. Yes, absolutely. So when did you fall in love with basketball?
Based on my experience, in my neighborhood when I was growing up, basketball was not one of the things that we played. Elementary school and even much of junior high school, we would run up and down the block as if we were running sprints and track and field. We played football in the streets. Mm-hmm. We played baseball in the alley and at the park, but not very much basketball in my neighborhood. It wasn't until I got to junior high school late, like almost in the ninth grade before I was really introduced to basketball. And once I was introduced to it, then I was up at the park, and the park in my neighborhood at that time was a park called Sportsman's Park, which is now called Jesse Owens, which is in the inner city area. And I was up at Sportsman's Park every day from the beginning that it opened at 10 in the morning until go to lunch and come back up and go to dinner and come back up. We have to live right around the block from it. And so I spent many hours up at Sportsman's Park playing basketball, learning hook shots, which at that time was the major thing because Kareem was out. Kareem was starting to come out. So we were starting to just learn the fundamentals of that. So it was late in my to me compared to now where kids are actually pushed into AAU and you know at 9 and 10 and 11 right. and 12 years old.
Yeah. And so where did you end up going to high school and after basketball's introduced you and you know, you did what all of us do when we love basketball, go hoop at the park forever all
yes,
day.
Yes.
And so where did that take you in high school and how did that you know, develop?
Well, I went to George Washington High School, from there I left and went to Harbor Community College. Then I left and went, and I left there and then went to San Jose State. While I was in high school, I did participate in basketball and track. I was a track and field athlete as well.
Okay.
But basketball, again, was just new to me. And so was track, but basketball was just new to me. So I spent many hours, like I said, up at the park, even when I was in high school. I closed Sportsman's Park down so many times. It closed at 10 at night, so I would be up there till 10.
I love it. And so so you went from not knowing it, barely playing, to becoming a college athlete at it. How tough was it, or was that always like a goal, right? These kids nowadays were like, hey, I want to be in the NBA, or I want to go play at a certain college. Was that the goal for you then, or were you just playing and that's what how you got stumbled upon?
No, the era I'm talking about is in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And for any historic context, the NBA was not that well known in the 60s. Mm-hmm. There maybe have only been 8 to 10 teams in the NBA. So it wasn't a lot of fanfare, it wasn't a lot of people going to games. A lot of the games you'd have to see tape delay. There wasn't any, you know, contracts for live performances of games. So that part for me to be saying I'm going to aspire to be a pro basketball player was not there. Mm-hmm. For me to aspire because I loved the sport, enjoyed it, was there. And yeah, the thought of maybe getting a college scholarship was there. Once I found out that's what you could do, I didn't even know when I first started it. That's how people got to college. Mine was just the love of the game and to be as good as I could at it while I was learning it.
Absolutely. And did you have coaches when you were young? Like you end up being, well, how long did you actually coach for?
How long did I coach?
Did you coach, yeah.
I coached for 38 years.
So you coached for 38 years. Did you know you wanted to be a coach through your high school and college years? Or did you have coaches that influenced you like, maybe that is a route that I'm gonna go?
That's an interesting question. I think most of us as individuals, whether we know it or not, we're probably seeking what is our purpose in life. And either we find it or it finds us. And when I was in high school, I was playing, my teams were, in my mind, were pretty talented, were fairly talented. We had all the elements, and back then it was position based on a standard numbers of position. So you had a point guard, you had a two guard, a shooting guard, you had a small forward, a power forward, and a center. And that's where people based on. We had all those elements at my high school. Our center was probably about 6'8", mm-hmm. and we had power forward that was probably about 6'6", and you know, we went down the line with what was the typical type, which could have competed against every school in, at that time, what was a legendary league called the Southern League. The Southern League in the inner city was just a great competitive league with all the inner city schools that were around. That was Washington, Fremont, Dorsey, LA, Jefferson, and Manual Arts. So those were the schools that were in the Southern League, which was a predominantly black league, and eventually it was debunked. But I remember having a conversation with my high school coach. My team was not very good at Washington. We had all the elements. I thought we could be good, just based on us competing against other teams, but we didn't win very many games. And I would ask him, when I was a senior, I asked him, I said, so what do you need to do to become a coach? Because at that time I was thinking, I can coach this team better than you. because I had the guys here, I was actually named the captain of the team, and I would talk to them and motivate them or whatever. And so he told me, he said, well, first of all, you have to become a teacher. And then once you're teaching at a school, then you can apply to become a coach, which we see a vast departure from that in today's. Back in those days, a math teacher may be the basketball coach. Right.
Yeah. My math, my JV coach was my math teacher.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So they selected people that were actually on the staff of the school. Now we have people hired just walk-on coaches just to be coaches. But back then you had to actually work on the campus, which now motivated me to want to be a teacher. I said, well, if that's what you have to do to be a coach, I want to coach. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be a teacher. So I immediately move on my curriculum towards becoming a teacher. And because I was an athlete, the obvious major was physical education. So I became a physical education major. I switched from being a history, social studies, and even possibly a math major to becoming a physical education major. I was always socially active. So when I was in college, I was a physical education major with a sociology minor. In those days, we had to actually have a minor also. Yeah. So I could teach social studies and things like that. So I became focused on doing what I needed to do to become a teacher so that I could eventually hopefully apply to become a coach. Now, all along, I'm an athlete myself. Never thought that I was good enough to be a pro basketball player, and there was no such thing as pro track. Mm. I was just doing the athletic thing because I loved athletics, and it was a means to an end. I was on a scholarship, getting away to pay my way to get my education to become a teacher so I could become a coach.
Love it, love it. It's I think people get caught up nowadays, right, on being something specific, but you had to become a teacher to become a coach, which probably helped you in coaching, right? Like the philosophies and all those types of things, right?
I mean, you learn to do lesson plans and organize your classrooms, and it's a lot of the same traits, for sure.
Absolutely, and that's what people need to see, is that sometimes you gotta take the stairs, right? What you were trying to do at the top, you're not gonna do in the midsection of the stairs. It's gonna be something totally different to help guide you and lead you to what the next thing, especially in basketball, because there's so many, things that are in life that you experience playing the game or coaching the game.
Right.
Embrace those moments. Don't run away from them.
Yes.
So you were a junior college coach for a long time. How big of an impact did junior college have for you being at Harbor College before you went on to San Jose State?
A coaching or participant? I'm not sure what you're saying.
Both. When you were still playing. You were playing, how big, because you went you know, I'm just comparing it to, you went to go coach in junior college, right? Was that, where did you have a...
That's not where I started, but that's, I did right. actually do spend much of my time in coaching in junior college, yes.
You're right. So did somebody have a big impact on you in junior college? And that's where you wanted to be because, you know, or that was a good place for you to be for being a coach.
Yeah. Well, my junior college coach had the biggest impact on me in becoming a coach in general because I got lucky. I got with a guy that really appreciated hard work and defense. Mm-hmm. And skill was obviously always a factor. But some coaches, you know, that's the main thing they're looking at. Well, can he shoot? Can he dribble? Blah blah blah. Well, this guy was more interested in, you know, how hard do you play? How aggressive are you? How persistent are you? And are we going to do that? Use that those elements to stop the other team from scoring? So that was not given to me in high school. But the main focus in my community college coach. So my community college coach told me, you know, me and him became close, and I was the captain of my community college team. Again, so I was the captain of my high school team, I was the captain of my community college team. And when I got ready to graduate and move forward, he even guided me to say, well, you know, what you need to do is make sure you get a master's, which would raise the ceiling for me, because now whatever level that I wanted to coach at, I would be qualified to. Mm-hmm. Interesting though, because I would ask him, now he's a white guy, we have a great relationship even to this day, but I asked him, well, do you have a master's? He said no. But he didn't need a master's. Mm-hmm. He's an athlete from USC, graduated from USC. Some things that are afforded, which is always brought back to us in the African American community, as our parents and grandparents, particularly mine, sometimes we just have to take, like you were saying, the stairs. We have to take a different route. We have to take a more difficult route, even at times. But he was giving me the roadmap to say, I'm not telling you to do what I did, I'm telling you to do what you need to do. Mm. And thank God for him so that I was able to get a degree, get a teacher's credentials, and then get a master's so that I was qualified to teach at every level between high school and college.
That's awesome. That's awesome, man. That the mentoring, right, always is a huge factor. That's the cheat code I tell people. If you want to get to success fast, is get somebody who can tell you exactly what mm-hmm, to do mm-hmm, and give mm-hmm, you that guidance, mm-hmm. right? And then, you know, this is a time in the 60s where you have some social unrest, right? And a lot of social injustices were happening. And, you know, MLK, Malcolm X, out here in California, the school protests from Cal to CSUN had some sit-ins mm-hmm. and all those types mm-hmm. of things.
Yeah.
What was your experience like during that time as an athlete, where the athletes were the kind of the voice of the community, a part of the voice of the community?
Well, again, a very, very good question. I experienced all of that, you know, graduating from high school in 1967, being in community college in 68. Martin Luther King was assassinated while I was in community college. Malcolm X was assassinated during this time frame. Kennedy was assassinated during that time frame. And then actually my choice to go to San Jose State, which is in Northern California, which is right on the hub of the Bay Area, which includes Oakland and Berkeley and Cal and all that, and a great influence by the Black Panthers. So I firsthand saw this and dealt with this firsthand, and as I said earlier, I've always been a social activist kind of guy that really wanted to see things done right by my community and my people. So that was always a tug for me. And I have to say that I did have some struggles even while I was in college because of the input that some of the social issues that were taking place and how we were, we meaning African Americans, were choosing to deal with it. Many times it was based on protest, dissent, trying to have you show that you're not going to put up with certain things. So when I went to San Jose, a lot of influence from that. We had a great BSU there, Black Student Union. And I happened to be there during the time that we had quite a few Olympians in the athletic world from track and field. And I'm surprised to this day many times that I've spoken at other places and to different groups. And I mentioned people like Tommy Smith and John Carlos and Lee Evans, who participated in the 68 Olympics. And Tommy Smith and John Carlos actually demonstrated on the stand with a sign of a black fist, with their heads down up on the stand. And unfortunately, like some of the things that's happened today, many people that are younger don't realize that protest took place. They've not heard of Tommy Smith or John Carlos. Maybe you can push him back to Kaepernick, Colin Kaepernick, because he did the same type of protest by kneeling, but this protest was done 50 years, 40 years after, the initial one. That was a great influence to me, being around those guys, because I was on the track team right after that. I went to San Jose in 69, and Tommy Smith was not there, but John Carlos and Lee Evans were there, and many other really great athletes that, you know, I could mention, but there was some people would not know, but in their own right were great athletes and world-class athletes. People that had world record in indoor meets and 60-yard dash and a 50-yard dash. So I was around a lot of really great world-class athletes. Even here in the city here, we had an athlete, Herman Franklin, who was a great friend of mine that participated with me at Harvard College, world-class athlete in many sports. He was kind of like a triathlon guy, a decathlon guy, I should say. That influenced me in basketball, because now I'm around guys that were the best in the world. And how do they train? Mm-hmm. How do they think? How do they respond to people? Just how do they talk? I mean, when you're around those kind of guys, if you're not trying to soak in, what do great people do? How do they do? Then you're missing out. So I'm in the background. I was a good athlete. I was not a great world-class athlete. So, I accept that. And like I said, I got an education from it, right. And it was great. but what I got from it more than the education was the ability to relate their thought processes, their feelings, their practices that helped me for a lifetime in my career, and also the things that I got from being up north with the Panthers and the great things that they did, the free lunch programs and the breakfast programs and helping people, just impacted my life greatly.
No, absolutely. I want to ask a question. Just, do you think that today's athletes should be just as strong and just as out there doing the type of protest and things that the athletes then were doing? Is it necessary now? you know, because, you know, thank you first off, because that whole generation fought for us to have the liberties that we have today. And some of the, you know, it's not gone. Racism is never gone, I don't think, but just the acceptance of people and to have some type of equality, right? That time period is what opened those doors for us to be where we're at today. Do you think that that can needs to continue now, you know, where we are today, and how should athletes take a stand against that?
Well, you look at it, what was motivating athletes then and what motivates athletes now? And then there's always a universal motivator, which is money. And back then it was not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So people were doing things more for the pride of it, for the representation of what it meant to them and their community. Because of so much money right now, athletes get removed from that. And then many of them that still see that as, okay, I have money, so all I'm gonna do is give money. And that may not be enough. You know, that may be the easy way out, to donate $1 million, which is going to help a whole bunch of people, but you're not donating the emphasis behind what it is that is really truly needed in the community. You're going to help build a building, you're going to help, you know, do this and that. I'm not minimizing that, mm-hmm. but it's tougher when you're Muhammad Ali and you give up everything.
Yeah.
When you're Kaepernick and you give up everything.
Yeah.
You give your money, you give up your career for a purpose of something. So that's the difference to me right now, is that the athletes many times do things too much from a public relations standpoint. Ooh, we look at me, this is what I've done financially, as opposed to, you know, this is what my heart is really at. There are things that that we need in our community, that the support and the physicalness of you making a stand. First of all, you got to look at the history of some things. Even if we go back to this issue of the national anthem, who made this, that it was athletics that's supposed to play the national anthem at every event?
Right. Well,
who designated, okay, the athletics is going to be the focal point of the national anthem, you know? Mm. So that was placed on athletics some kind of way, and I don't know where. But now for athletes now to have to take on that and then do it through the mainstream, as opposed to even doing it how they would like to do it. I mean, Marvin Gaye was criticized for his singing of the national anthem at the All-Star game when he sang it in the 80s, because he made it more of a rhythm and blues song. Mm. So, you know, we take on some things and society flips on you sometimes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, thank you for that. I think it's important that this generation, specifically in the teens who have the influence, right? These younger kids are having, it's always been like that. Young kids with talent have influence and understand that their voice and their integrity and their stance on things does matter. Just like they'll follow you and I'm using Ja as an example because how fast his influence is, right? He does a celebration, and then literally the next day you see six other people doing it immediately. And if we have that type of influence, are we using it for the right thing? And it starts at a younger age, right? I'm sure you said that you were the captain of your high school, you were the captain of junior college. You had, seems like, a leadership type of role when you went to college as well, and when you went to San Jose. It's like, but where did that leadership, where did those characteristics come from? Is that something that was raised up in the home that you grew up in, or where did that leadership stuff come from?
Exactly, bingo. Yeah. Exactly right. Having a mother and a father that had values of work ethic and do for others as you'd have them do to you. And we need to help each other and our community. And having that instilled in you from early on is obviously going to be part of your personality.
Yeah.
So and not everyone has the nuclear mother and father. I mean, obviously there are some single parent mothers that are doing a great job trying to raise their children, and particularly if they have young boys, you know, trying to move them towards manhood, may need some help, because it is going to take some aspects of men to really push on boys to help them become more men, that all females may not have every element to do that. I mean, and there are some dads that are trying to help raise their daughters.
Right.
And may need some help with that from some females. And the dads are doing a great job at that. So, without a doubt, we still need that village kind of mentality. Yes. And we say it on a daily basis. I know we do. What's up, my brother? How you doing, my sister? You know, we say those words, and there's some slight real meaning behind it, but not as strong as it actually could be and should be. We're just recognizing we're from the same ethnicity, maybe, but not from the same struggle or the same awareness. And then when we can begin to add more substance to it, then I think we'll get back to that. It takes a village to raise people. So, you know, you've probably heard these stories about in the old days, if you got in trouble and the lady down the block heard about it before you got to your house, the lady down the block was going to chastise you, mm-hmm. and then call your mother. And if before you could get home, you may get chastised by three people, and then you're gonna really get it from your mother and, right. and your father.
Yep.
So that's when the village was saying you can't do the, you know, certain things, and we're doing this to try to somewhat scare you straight, to show that we're concerned about you, not just to be aggressive with you. And that's where our community can get back to trying to be more of a well-rounded community to help each other.
Yep, have that accountability.
Yeah.
That accountability. And I think that's where I think, it's like my generation, right? I think we are the last ones, and I'm about to be 40. And so where I had that accountability with my friends' parents, like they had pretty much the same authority as my parents. You know, as long as it wasn't nothing crazy out of line. Now kids, first off, you can't trust some of these adults because they didn't like how they were raised and they don't want to be mean to their kid or whatever. They want to be their kid's friends, right? There's a lot of that going on. And then it's even worse and worse the younger and younger these kids get, right? That they're so far removed from that authority piece. Is like they don't even respect, they're allowed to cuss, they allowed to watch whatever they want, just all those what is it called, boundaries that mm-hmm. were put up for us mm-hmm. to make sure that we were raised and we seen the world a certain way and we wanted to make impact and we had purpose and we have like our characters what mattered more than any of this stuff,
right,
is out the door. If the kid can, when we, you know, we always relate it back to basketball, if the kid can be athletic and can shoot the ball, I don't care if he cusses, I don't care if he's disrespectful, he's a hooper. Like, no, that you're it's working backwards, and that's constantly my communication to parents is like, hey, if your kid is acting up, take basketball away, and they won't do it. They're like, no, he won't. He's not gonna get caught up to whoever. I'm like, oh, that's the issue, is that you're giving him what he wants when it needs to be taken away, so he honors it and respects not just basketball but the things around it. So.
So are you a parent right now?
I have a 4-year-old and a 6-year-old.
So you're going to be a great parent then.
Thank you. I'm trying. I was just talking to, literally on the phone on the way here with somebody about, I was talking to Reggie. I was talking to your son, actually. He heard my son screaming in the background on the phone, and he was like, they on spring break, huh? I'm like, yep. And just like, I'm trying to balance the love, discipline, sure, and who he is. Like, if I were like my parents, I don't want to be like my mom and dad. Like, shoes thrown at you, switches, and all that kind of stuff. I'm not going to do all that. But I also know that, you know, there has to be discipline.
Yeah.
You know, spare the rod, spoil the child. I believe in that concept, biblical concept. But, like, trying to find that balance right now, whew, it's tough. So, yeah. Thank you for the re-encouragement. I'm doing it the right way, though.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, college. What was it like playing basketball in college? Like, were those the good years of basketball for you? What part of basketball was your pinnacle of like, man, this was fun? And
well, to be honest, basketball was not great for me all the time. My high school career was starting off back when I was starting. We had what you guys would call now frost, soft, and then you have JV, mm-hmm, and you have varsity now. Back in my era, we had what they call B's and C's. C's were the smaller kids. You could be a senior on the C team. They did this for kids that were not the biggest and most athletic, but gave them opportunities to play even though they were not going to be able to be on the varsity. So the smaller kids could be on the C team, the medium-sized kids could be on the B team, and then the more developed kids, no matter what, could be JV and varsity. I went out as a 10th grader for my B team and got cut, and that didn't make the team, mm-hmm, even though I had spent the whole summer just practicing at Sportsman's for hours. So I was devastated, and I got cut because the coach never even took a look at me.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't know that I was, I guess he'd already had people, whatever, but never noticed me at all. And so I was devastated. So my 10th grade year, I didn't play basketball. The 11th grade year, I continued to improve. Then I made the varsity team. So then the B team said, oh man, we should have gotten you. I don't know how I would have missed you. You know, well, you never looked.
Mm.
Those experiences help you further down the line as a person. When I was a college coach, I had tryouts. And at the tryouts, I gave everybody a look,
yeah,
while I was in college, in high school and college, because I remember that experience where I did not get seen because the coach didn't take it seriously. Now, did I take very many other people to try it out? No. But I do have some success from people trying out that I knew nothing about that were on the campus that turned out to be great players, very good players for me.
Yeah.
But that comes from like from experience. So when I went to community college, I was injured, so I didn't play for my first season. I played the second season and did fairly well, and just opted to move on to the 4-year college. And then what happened was exactly what I was alluding to earlier. There was so much tension going on with the black studies and black students and the Panthers and things that I kind of got caught up in that scene, and did not do very well with my college basketball career because I was in resistance mode,
yeah,
the entire time. Although I was not as much, and I was in resistance mode because my college team was doing poorly. We were not winning games, and you know, people in your ear, well, you know, you should be starting and you're not playing, and why are you letting these people use you? And mm-hmm, I mean, a lot of pressure on people back in those days in the 60s with civil rights going on and protesting. Track and field was a little different. I was more individualized, so I didn't have to have the approval of a guy to say, you should be on this team, this and that. If I performed well, then I was going to be,
yeah.
you know, able to perform in all the meets. So that was a little different for me.
Got it. And so fresh out of graduating college, you went right into teaching and coaching?
Actually, I did. Yeah, right after I graduated, when we say right after, I graduated and I got a job and I was working on my teacher's credential. So you graduate and then the next move is you got to get a credential.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was working on my teacher's credential and I got a call from a friend of mine that was working at Manual Arts. He was the top security guy there on campus or whatever. And he says, hey, Rich, you want a coaching job? I'm like, yeah. And I was going to Cal State LA and working at Water and Power. So I had a job, I was going to school.
This is where you were getting your master's at Cal State LA?
My teacher's credential.
Oh, the credential,
yeah,
that's right, okay.
I was starting out there, yeah. And so I'd come back from San Jose and enrolled back in here. So he said, well, we have a B job open, a B and C job open.
Mm-hmm.
I said, oh, okay, sure, I'm not doing anything. I never had any coaching experience. So I go down, I meet with them, and they were just so accommodating. They said, what we're going to do is bingo. The math teacher is going to be the coach of record, but you're going to be the coach.
Yeah.
So we have to show that the teacher is there and you're going to coach. So the math teacher came out. He met me once, and that was it. And I coached the guys all during the week. The games come. The math teacher maybe came to a couple of games here and there. Right off the bat, my team did great. My C team won the league and maybe lost two or three games. My B team won the league and didn't lose any games.
Mm.
We were undefeated. And that was with me having no coaching experience. But what I had was what I alluded to earlier was this mentality of what it takes to be great. And what it takes to be great is hard work and focus and dedication and sacrifice and this and that, and conditioning. Remember, I'm a part track guy.
Yeah.
So we just condition. So our game plan was just to out hustle and out run every team, which is what we did. Mm. And two of those games, we beat people by 9,200 points. Just pressing, you know, emulating UCLA at the time. They were running 2-2-1 full court press with Lou Alcindor and Mike Warren and all the UCLA guys. And then 2 years later, I was moved up to the varsity, and a year later, I won my first city title.
Huh.
But again, took some intervention from the village. I was at Cal State LA, and I had to do my student teaching, and they had it set up where the student teaching should have been done in the eastern part of the city, like at Wilson or someplace in East LA, because that's where Cal State is located.
Mm-hmm.
But I was going to be able to have a job at Manual, which is in the more centralized part of the city. The administrators there said, no, you can't go to Manual, you have to go to Wilson. So they're going to eliminate me getting a job and a coaching job because of their bureaucracy of you have to do this. But there was and the reason why is that no supervising instructor, you have to have someone that's going to supervise you, evaluate you, wanted to come down to Manual.
Oh, got it.
There was one black instructor in the physical education department who was on leave. Somebody advised me how to contact him. I contacted him. He said, sure, I'll do it. So he actually agreed to be my evaluator, came down to Manu. Me and him became great, great friends. And that's how I actually was able to get a job. So I started off as a student worker, getting my credential at Manu. As soon as I got my credential, the next semester, they hired me as a PE teacher.
That's PE, yeah, sure.
And 2 years later, I was a varsity coach.
Wow.
And the next year, I was a city champion. We were 24-1.
Dang. Man. What's the, I mean, I guess you kind of told the secret to the success is the hard work and playing fast and being in shape. What else about your coaching do you think provided so much success that fast? It took Wooden 10 years to win. It took you two.
Yeah. Well, I used Wooden's 10 years that he used to get to where he was when he started winning, and then I used the secrets that he had when he was winning. So he helped me because I used to go to all the clinics at UCLA. So I was a sponge trying to get as much knowledge about what I was going to do as possible. I didn't think I knew it all. I thought I knew nothing, which I did. And I was asking questions, going to clinics, reading books, just totally immersed into learning all I could about basketball. And then then applying the practical, everyday things that I learned about people in general, about how to interact with people, how to respond to people. You already kind of mentioned it earlier, and I'm talking about prima donnas now, people that think they're entitled to something because they're pretty good at what they do. And you were saying that parents were enabling them and maybe even coaches enable them. Mm. I hate them. No. Too many people are thriving and giving all they have to reach a goal. And I was one of those people. The last thing I'd want to have is somebody that did less than I did and got much more because of, you know, some specific thing. So everybody's going to be the same across the board. I'm going to treat you all the same in terms of all the rules and regulations that we set forth on our team. I'm going to treat you differently based on your personality and your character.
Yes.
I can't say I like every person the same. I'm going to, if every person does what I ask them to do in this setting, you know, you got to run this, you got to do that, that's fine. But there's some people that I may not like as much as a person that's going to play a bunch of minutes, and there's a kid that I love that I'm not going to put in. And when the game's over, me and the kid I love is going to get something to eat, and you know, the other kids, I see you when I see you.
Right.
But you're going to have been, but he would have touched all the bases. He's respectful. He's playing as a team. He's doing all that. If those things are not taking place, then he's not on my team. And so I surrounded myself with everybody with the same mentality. And the mentality that I've used and that I've come to see as universal is pride. From the inner city schools that I've coached at and the people I've been around, pride has been one of the major motivating factors because I've seen people that had very little but was so prideful that they wanted to be able to stand up and say, I'm somebody and I did something. So that's why it was difficult for me to cut people because most of those kids would run through a wall, but only can take 15 of you. I'd have 80 people out for tryouts. Yeah. I only can take 15 of you. And all 80 may run through a wall. So I gotta take the best 80 that has some talent and this and that. So that's the difference between, which I would say to people, I pose that question many times to coaches, what is the difference between your top player and your so-called bottom player? What should the difference be? And the difference should only be skill. Mm. So if I put my 15th player in, he was going to play as hard as the first player. He may not be as good, yeah. but he was going to try as hard. He was going to want as much. He was going to do his best. And that's all I can ask people to do.
Man. So I'm coaching the sixth grade team right now. Everyone's talented. And they rely on their talent too much. And that's what I'm trying to teach them, that hard work part and all of that, right? Because they've been, for the last year, they've been running over teams. I just became the coach maybe a month ago. And I told the organization, I said, hey, I don't want any games for a month. We just need to practice so we can develop some culture. And that, what you said, is what I'm looking for. I didn't know how to verbalize it. I don't even know if I knew it, if that's what it was, right? Because I am two or three of the kids I'm on them. And they're 11 and 12. So I don't know if they truly understand why. But now I can verbalize it to them, saying that, hey, I don't want there to be a difference from this character, your character and those tools. There's a difference in your skill. You're going to play more. But if and only if you have the highest character of, and crazy enough, the kid with the lowest amount of skill is the one with all the energy, listening to me, running through a wall. And so it's like, if you play like him,
then with your skill,
man. And so thank you for putting words to my thoughts, because I didn't know what it was. And I want to explain, like, I'm one of those ones, like, my mama told me to do something. She never told me why. If I asked her why, I'm getting smacked in my mouth. I'm opposite. Like, I want people to ask why.
Yeah,
I think it's super important for you to know why you're doing something and all that. And my mom's better now. she lets me ask her why now. So, but I want to let those kids know, like, why am I tough for you? Like, I just want you to be good, or, you know, I'm saying all these things, but that's it, that character piece. So thank you for sharing.
I would tell people in coaching, I want you to know why, just what you're saying. And I'm going to tell you a limited amount of times. After that, I'm like, your mom, just do what I told you to do. If after the 10th time, then right. I'm not going, you know, I done told you why, do what I tell you to do.
Patience is gone. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I've sometimes have not done as well with coaching my little young teams. I've had several times that people have asked me to coach smaller teams. And I remember I had a good friend of mine that I was coaching, and they might have been like 8 years old or 10 years old. And my grandson was on there, or my son was on there when he was young. And this kid was a bigger kid, and I knew his grandfather. I knew the mother, who was his daughter. And he didn't play as much as he should have. And they were just on my case. Oh, coach, you know, I don't know why you're not playing. Because he's like 8 or 9 or 10. I said, I don't play him as much because he don't try as hard. Mm. This is at 8, 9, or 10. And that lesson needs to be learned then.
Yes.
Not when you get to be 18 or 17 or 14. It's now. Sometimes that, you know, it was appreciated in many, and some, oh, you know, he's the best player. Like, again, if he don't try so hard, then Joy's playing, and I like Joy. You know, enjoy your try.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right, 2-minute drill, okay? In 2 minutes, and we'll hop into a little bit of detail, your coaching career starting at Manual Arts as the varsity coach. Or I guess when you did the BNC team, like you just told us, where else did you coach? And just little details about each coaching position in 2 minutes.
Okay. I coached at Manual for 14 years, and 12 of those years were at the varsity level. When I left, while I was there, fortunate, we were in, I went to about 8 semifinals of the city. And the city was king back then. It was not this big staff. The City was at the great teams, in about five city championship finals. Mm. I went to like seven or eight semifinals and five city finals, and I won two of the city finals, and then I won a state title while I was at Manual. In the year that I did not win the city, I lost the city championship, and then the next week I won the Southern California final and then won the state title the same year. So I was a wild card team into the state playoffs the year I won the state at Manual. I left there and went to LA City College, LACC. I spent 1 year at UC Santa Barbara as assistant.
Okay.
And came back, and I was at, when I came back to Manual, and then I went to LA City College where I had great teams. I spent 3 years at LA City, and we were like the third, during that time I was at LA City, but Showtime going on at the Forum with the Lakers.
Oh, nice.
And so we had the Lakers, Showtime scoring a lot of points. We had LMU with Hank Gathers, Bo Kimble, and then we had LA City College. So my teams led the nation in scoring for two of those 3 years. We were just shooting them up and getting them up. And great, great teams at LA City. And then I left there and went to Cal State San Bernardino for 3 years. It was not a great experience for me, probably because of several things. One is that my mentality and upbringing from San Jose and things like that. At that time, for me, it was pretty racist in that city towards I didn't have very much support, and my athletes did not have very much support, so they were, you know, not treated well. They were ineligible. I never had a team that was my full team. Always, by the time the conference come, we'd have people ineligible. They did not have good support academically. They were making a transition from Division III to Division II, which was non-scholarship Division II. But, you know, the bigger Division II schools, they had 10 scholarships, and they gave me 4. So I'm trying to compete with the bigger schools with 4 scholarships, and that was tough. So nobody was ever on a full scholarship. But we beat teams that were the top teams. Bakersfield was the national champion that year, and we beat them by 15 at San Bernardino. So we were one of their, they had lost three games my last year there, and we were one of the three losses. I then came back to Southwest College, where I spent 16 seasons at Southwest College. And fortunately was able to win a state title there also. So I've won one in high school and one in community college. And me and my son, Reggie Jr., are the only father and son teams who have won state titles in high school. So he's won one in high school, which I'm very proud of him. Yeah. Great, great coach, great guy.
Yeah.
And so, so I spent, like I said, 16 years there, had great, great success. 4 conference titles, one state title, and you know, a lot of great guys going on in 4-year colleges.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about that? Like when you reflect on all the players that you had an impact on, and lives changed from your coaching, and you know, the things you've done. We talked about purpose earlier, and you can just see through the thread of your life where you wanted to make an impact, and you wanted to be a leader, and you wanted to have purpose. Through your coaching, now that you're retired, do you feel like you fulfilled that purpose in your coaching? Regardless of the titles, right? Regardless of the win-loss records, the true purpose in being a coach.
Yes, I do. Absolutely. Based on the fact that I've been the best men in some of my players' weddings, I've been the godparents of kids. Father's Day, I get tons of phone calls from my former players. You know, just this past week, I was inducted into the LA City Hall of Fame, and many of my players. We had more people there than other people. My players came and supported me. So my journey with them was not just about basketball. It was about what we've been talking about. It's about the character building and the bond that we had for helping each other. And they helped me as much as I've helped them. I've learned as much from them as hopefully they've learned from me. So the bond is there. All of them have not been walking the perfect, you know, straight and narrow. They've wavered from here or there, but that's all of us as humans,
right,
you know. But our love and commitment to each other has remained. I even throw in there, which is interesting, because there are a lot of people that I've come in contact with that are connected to me in basketball that are not athletes, stat keepers and just fans in general, groupies or whatever, people that just love basketball, that I've had a big impact on too, that we've had, when I say impact, we've had a bond and a closeness. So I hear from those people also, and many of those are females. So it's, whether they be stat keepers or you know, females that were in my classes or that just used to come to the games. So I am really blessed and you know, appreciative and grateful for the connections that I have formed with people in general.
Yeah, absolutely. And what did it mean to you to go and coach in the inner city? It seemed like you stayed in places where, you know, our people needed somebody. Mm-hmm. Was that intentional? And what is the reward in that?
Well, I don't know if it was intentional from a conscious effort and thought process. I'm just going to do this. It was intentional from a standpoint that this is what felt comfortable for me. This is who I am and what I do. But never did I say, I'm never going to do this, I'm never going to do that, from a conscious standpoint, being outside of our, you know, the community. So it's been something that has just been a part of my life and part of my being.
Absolutely. You said when you were coaching at Manual Arts, the city section was king.
Yes.
It's definitely changed a little bit.
A little bit. Wow.
So my question for you is this. I'm going to flip this on you. If you were a coach today in the city section, how would you do it? What would you bring to bring that spark back that you had when you were coaching?
Well, do you think people change?
Do I think people? Oh yeah, people change.
And do they change from a personality standpoint?
Oh no.
Okay. So from a personality standpoint, there's always room to improve. Mm-hmm. You can self-reflect and try to self-improve, but who you are is who you are. So I think for me, I'm going to be who I am, and I'm going to go right back to the same roots that I've done before. Is go back to the hard work and try to find people that, you know, want to play basketball and want to be good people and want to work at it, work with their parents. That's one thing, you know, we've not touched on that much, is the parent involvement now in sports is just out of control. I mean, you know, people believe that, as one of the professions, I guess they believe that they can say and do anything even though they're not an expert at it.
Yep.
You know, it would be really ridiculous for me to go to a computer tech job and tell them how to do their job. I don't know that much about computers.
Right.
You know, I've seen computers, I operate a computer, but when it comes down to really working it and knowing the ins and outs of it, I don't know it. I'd have to go to an expert at that. And there are parents that see basketball and they know, you know, they watch it on TV and they've seen some games. But to have the mentality that they're going to know more about basketball than a person that is actually trained in it is a little presumptuous and a little false. And that can be relative, because there are some coaches that don't know very much about basketball either.
But man.
You know?
100%.
So I said that can be relative. But when you find people that do, and you get that sense, then you let them do their job and you do yours. You support each other. Mine was, I was helping parents develop their child, their loved one. We were working together, but not where you're telling me what to do to in terms of playing basketball with them. So a parent may call me and say, Coach, would you tell Johnny to take the trash out? Because he'll do anything you tell him to do. He won't do anything I asked him to do, you know, because he had that much respect and it was facetious. We were laughing about it, but that's what kind of a, like a joke that the guys, they locked into to what we were trying to do, and the rewards that they received just made them have a good self-esteem, feel good about themselves, their pride about what they were doing. And we didn't always take first place. We didn't always have great, great teams. We always were competitive. We always were respected. And that's what we were striving to do, is just do the best we could. And when it was over, we thought we did the best that we could.
Amen. Your son is following in your footsteps. What does that mean to you? And do you, was that always in the plan? Did you always see him being a coach?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I was shocked when he told me he wanted to be a coach. Reggie has played for me on a couple of years. He played for me for a year in high school. And he actually played for me 2 years in community college. He played for me at Southwest. And he got a scholarship out of Southwest to Howard and was a very good player. But he never showed any interest in, I mean, we never really talked basketball or strategy or anything like that. Really bright young man, smart. You know, I would have thought he would have gone into something else more brainiac, you know. And but one day he did tell me that he was interested in coaching. And so I did everything I could as a parent to support that and to help him move into this business. And, you know, on his own accord, he's done a great job, and he's doing a great job. So I'm very proud of him.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Is there anything else that you want to share from your stories that the people should know? Just, you know, through your time, maybe it's an overarching thing that happened in your life over and over, or just as a coach on this journey. Something that you want to highlight?
Pretty much we've touched the basis of the foundation of what I'm all about. Again, my purpose, I feel, has never been solely to teach people to dribble and to shoot. My purpose has been to guide people to become better people, to be productive in society, to be able to stand up for what they think is right, to have pride in what they do. I utilize basketball to get that message over to them.
Love it, love it. Thank you for sharing, you know, a very quick version of your long journey in coaching and in life in general. We're going to move to the next part of our show. So we're going to my Rushmore, okay? So you're Mount Rushmore. And I heard that you're a DJ on the weekends. You have a live show that you do. What's the details about that?
Well, I've always had this love of music. Which obviously means people can be multifaceted. It doesn't take away my love for basketball, but but I've always been loving music. I remember when I was young, my dad. I started off with, you know, obviously R&B, and then my dad was really into jazz. And the first, when I was in junior high school, he said, "Okay, well, this weekend we're going. I'm gonna take you to a jazz club," and I was excited all week long. Just to know that I'm going to a jazz club. So I got dressed up in a little tie and a sweater and go to a local jazz club. And to hear the people live was just like, I'm in this club. I'm drinking my little Shirley Temple drink at the bar, and it was just great. Being in the neighborhood, grew up with people with the Motown era. People were learning to dance, learning to cha-cha. So I've just always been around music. So at my family gatherings, I'd always be the one that would bring the music and make the CDs. So lately, as I retired, I kind of started doing some things, getting, again, learning how to DJ, small equipment, this and that. So now I have a stream that's on Sundays called Club Reminisce, where we go old school, so you have to be who you are. So I go old school. You know, I do like some of the new records also, music also. But that's DJ Reggie, Coach Mo, on YouTube. So I do that every Sunday. DJ Reggie, Coach Mo, 7 o'clock on Sundays. We do, you know, just some old school. Everybody has a little fun. They chat. And so it's been going on now for almost 5 years. Oh, nice. Went through the pandemic. Mm-hmm. When pandemic was out, I take my music out on Tuesdays, put it out in my driveway. The whole neighborhood would come out.
Real, every that's Tuesday. The hip-hop era. That's the real hip-hop.
Every Tuesday during the pandemic, during the shutdown, we played music for a couple hours, 2 or 3 hours, and people started bringing their tables out with candles and lounge chairs, and other people would come by, so our little block would just have a little block party every Tuesday, and we just continued on.
Man, I love that, man. I love that. So yeah, your top four artists.
Top four artists, yes. Would be Marvin Gaye would be my number one guy. I'd go into groups, and my major group is The Temptations.
Yeah.
The Temptations, and my second major group would be The Dramatics, who try to imitate The Temptations. And then thirdly would be Homegrown Whispers, who went to Jordan High School and went to live in the Jordan Down Projects. Mm-hmm. So those would be my top four: Marvin, Temptations, Dramatics, Whispers, and you got to throw in Stevie and Maze and the Spinners for me. So
love it, love it. Yeah, mine, and it's crazy enough, literally is one of my top four is The Temptations.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So the limited series they had.
Oh yeah.
I literally, what was it 2 days ago? Literally listened to every song in that movie. They have a YouTube thing where it plays all the songs.
Okay.
I know
okay.
them front to back.
Okay.
100% my favorite, like,
nice.
Motown group from time, you know, from that time.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm just going to go old school because it's the vibe right now. So, yeah, definitely The Temptations. Michael Jackson. And, yeah, just me growing up in Thriller and that shock
right,
and just
right.
his skill for me just... timeless
right.
music. That's what I like timeless music. Who else? Got Earth, Wind & Fire. My dad used to play them all the time, playing his fake bass guitar in the car while we driving. Man, what you doing? Like grab the wheel. Literally, I know his knee was on the wheel controlling it, but I'm like, you crazy. But Earth, Wind & Fire for sure. And last... Man, I probably have to go. I'm trying to pick somebody good, somebody I actually listen to. I'm gonna have to go more modern, I think. Yeah, I have to go a little bit more modern, and I'll probably go with Drew Hill, the R&B group.
Okay.
Drew Hill, man. Yeah, they got some hits, man. So
thanks.
Yeah. No, it's a. I'm definitely tap in. I listen to, so you probably need to get a TikTok.
Well, I do TikTok too.
Okay, you're on a TikTok. Mm-hmm. I would say that's where I listen to. Me and my wife literally listen to this one DJ. He's on every night pretty much. And so.
What's his name?
I don't even know his name. Because it's he does like it's called Midnight Love or something like that. So okay, it's all these old school R&B joints. And so
I got you.
He just popped up on my feed one day. And so we just listened to him when we're just chilling and talking.
I do. I just started TikTok not too long ago.
Okay, dope. Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. DJ Coach Mo.
DJ Reggie Coach Mo.
DJ Reggie Coach Mo. Love it. Our next is Fix the Net. So a misconception about yourself that you want to make straight. And so after you tell me what it is, you could fix the net and dunk the ball.
Well, as time has gone on, my players, I hear all these stories that they have, and it's like, you know, the fisherman stories, you know, well, you know, the fisherman caught maybe this size fish, but by the time the story comes, it's a whale. So the misconception is that I was not this tyrant that just had no compassion for all the guys, and they know that too. Mm-hmm. But the stories I want to tell people, don't believe all these crazy stories that people are saying that I did, you know, where I would eat and tell them they got to run while I'm sitting there eating a hamburger, or, you know, I've heard all kind of stuff.
That's never happened once?
Maybe once.
Okay. Yeah. I love that.
But yeah, so just don't believe all the crazy stuff. If it's real crazy, I probably didn't do it. If it's a little crazy, maybe.
I love it. Okay. Go ahead and fix the net. Two-hand dunk. Love it. Love it. And this is where we flip the script. Two questions for me. Could be about anything in the world.
How did you, I mean, your purpose, this is such a great format, a great process or program. What made you get into this?
I saw a lot of bad basketball information getting out into the world. People talking to other people's parents who weren't professionals, you know what I mean, who were educated in the basketball space. And I knew I had the information, and I knew I had the friends who had the information. And so I had an event, and I just put all the coaches on a 10-minute podcast and asked them about their season and just mm-hmm. their coaching philosophies, and they loved it. And then Karina moved here. I've known Karina since she was 16. And so she was moving back out here, needed a life-changing situation. Mm-hmm. And me and my wife, like, yeah, come on, we'll help you. And I was like, I want to do a podcast. She was like, cool. My brother has these expensive cameras those cameras are family inherited from her. Okay. And we're like, all right, cool, we'll start. And Katino Mobley was my first guest. Mm-hmm. Derek Fisher, and then Matt Barnes, and then it was like, I had these, I'm like, oh, this is something. Okay. And we literally just figured it out on the way. And after the first few episodes, we were just talking about basketball, and we're like, hey, we have to actually structure this in a way to maybe we follow people's journeys, and we highlight the things, the information that families need to know. And so that's what we started doing to where we are to here in the studio, where it's I hear people's journeys, and I take something that they haven't heard yet, and I focus on that. Like with your journey and the civil rights movement and your purpose, like that's something that people need to hear and see through all this basketball stuff. It's such a bigger thing. And so my purpose is to help people share their journey so people have the right information and to connect people to whatever they want to do. Because I've had 75 people, or were we around 75 episodes, something like that, people sitting in this chair, I have the connections. I got the bridge. Like, hey, you want to talk to Reggie Morris Sr.? I can reach out to him for you now, right? Like, I have that bridge to connect people to what they need in this space. So that's what I'm doing and serving. And, you know, I think we finally made 53 cents on Instagram this past week. Like, we've been going for almost, or it's been 2 years now. Doing the show, and it's not all money motivated at all. We've been blessed to be in this studio and blessed that Karina's been behind the scenes helping with all the technology stuff. And our goal is just to hear people's journeys, and that's it. So,
yeah. And what is your vision? I mean, do you have a vision of future endeavors or a ceiling or what?
Yeah, so this is, I almost want to call this a hobby, right? The podcast stuff, at least. The vision is to be the ultimate connector. I want to get people from where they are to who they need to become, if that makes sense. Like, I want to put people in positions where they have to grow and develop and to reach their purpose. And however that looks. Right now, I have a middle school program that I run. I've helped just people and teams just develop things inside of basketball, and ultimately just be like a consultant in this space where I can help connect people. Like, hey, you want to be a trainer? I can connect you with this NBA trainer. You want to be a coach? I can connect you with this coach, and just help people get to their dreams. That's what gives me joy. I love when somebody reaches their goal and reaches their dream, and they get to dream bigger. Because for me, what's complicated in somebody's mind to get from one place to another is super simple for me. I don't know. That's my gift. Is like, oh, you want to meet this person? Okay, so I think this person knows them. So let's just go over there, talk to them, and I don't know. I just connected easier, and so using that gift to see that, man, you got to have some faith. And you gotta work. You gotta have some faith. Faith and works, they go together, and you can reach any of your dreams that way. So, yeah, that's the ultimate goal, is to just live in my purpose and please God. That's it. I want to please God while I do it. So, yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for you inviting me and allowing me to share my story. Thank you very much.
And thank you for coming and sharing your story. You have a 24-second shot clock. I don't know if you ever had that coaching in junior college. So. I'll give you 30 seconds. 30-second shot clock for you. Let the people know where they can find you on social media, and then any message that you have for them.
Okay, once again, the few things, I'm not a big social media guy, but the few things that I do musically would be on YouTube and on TikTok, and I'm under DJ Reggie, Coach Mo. There's some other DJ Reggies. That's why when you have to throw that Coach Mo in there, and then I pop right out right there. So that's on YouTube and on TikTok. No other message other than, you know, it's been my honor and privilege to coach so many and be around so many great, great individuals that, I've just been blessed and really appreciate a lot of the respect that I've gotten throughout my community for so many years.
Awesome, man. Thank you, sir. Appreciate your time here. That's all we have for you today, though, folks. See you next time. Peace.